all your lumber needs from us. We have number one treated pine, all different types of plywood, V-joint, siding board, and concrete board. In addition, we have grade 3 2x4s and form ply for boxing.
Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
This is Brass Stack Sunday, as you know, brought to you in association with Williams Industries Incorporated. In studio, we have Josh Drayden, we have Crystal Howell, and Devron Bruce. And we're talking integrity, we're talking corruption. Now, before we close, I want Josh to tell us a bit about this whole Perceived Corruption Index. It's something that we discuss a lot, and we really want to know what are the indicators and how we come up. I see some of my favorite countries, Finland and Norway, at the top of those two as well. They're topping a lot of things in relation to education and so on. I have to migrate over to these countries and see what, at least visit and see what they're doing right. So take us through the processes. How do you come up with who's number one and who's number 185?
Right. So that's a very good question. There are two things in the CPI, the Corruption Perception Index. There's the country rank and score. So the rank is what you just described, who's the first country. And of course, you can have countries that tie for similar positions. Mm-hmm. And then there's the score. The score ranges from 0 to 100. Mm-hmm. Closer to 100, you're perceived to be cleaner. And closer to 0, you're perceived to be corrupt. Mm-hmm. So that's essentially the scale. Mm-hmm. The CPI is a perceptions index, so it doesn't actually speak to actual corruption. There are other indicators and other tools that are used by Transparency International that does that. So this has also been called a survey of surveys. What that means is that the CPI itself is not a survey. It's in fact a part of usually a minimum of 3 surveys per country. And these surveys sometimes cover a range of issues. For example, there's the World Economic Forum survey that covers a range of economic and political issues. And there are 2 to 3 questions within that survey that would address issues of perceived corruption. Mm-hmm. So that's usually how this entire process is carried out. Now, these surveys that are administered in country tend to be surveys administered to experts or elites. So they're not, the persons who are polled aren't the average Joe on the street. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They're persons who are in industry or in the public sector. So that's another thing that we have to be aware of. So when we see all of these things and we hear about Norway and we hear about Barbados and we hear, it's really saying that, one, it's a perception. Don't count it as real. It has a part to play in terms of what countries countries engaging in business, etc., may enter a country and they may want to kind of find out what's happening in relation to corruption and the likelihood of paying a bribe in a transaction. It doesn't speak to where specific corruption exists, and that's something that I would reiterate, simply because quite often we would say, well, in order to get a better score on the CPI, we need to do this. That doesn't happen. What you would also realize is countries like Jamaica, for example, they have implemented a number of anti-corruption reforms, and that has been responsible for those being polled seeing some kind of progress to deal with the issue of corruption in those countries. The other thing is that...
Before we move on from there, in terms of sources, on the right-hand side, when I was looking at the report, I remember seeing things like some had 3 sources, some had 7 and so on.
Yes. Does that so it's make a minimum. A minimum of 3.
So what would cause some countries to have many sources and some to have the minimum of 3?
Right. It's just a number of polls being run within a particular country. So there are countries that are more advanced that may have a number of different survey agencies that operate there. And that typically would be the reason why. Mm-hmm. In the case of Barbados, there were 3 sources. So that's usually how it goes with regard to the sources themselves. Now, the CPI has been around for quite some time. Actually, before 2012, the CPI was on a 0 to 10 scale. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot less countries involved. People also say that there's a certain politics with regards to the CPI, and this is me wearing an independent hat in this instance. Because poor countries, developing countries, typically African countries, tend to score
low
on the CPI.
When you look at the map, they are just red. You know, yes. Red means bad. Like the whole continent, red. I mean, so, one as low as 6 when you talk 1 to 100.
Yeah, yeah. So that is the whole politics of it. Now, when we were to focus on Barbados and ask, why is Barbados the best scoring country within the Caribbean region? But we just had an entire 2 hours of conversation about corruption in Barbados. We realize that there is a disconnect between sometimes what the CPI may say exists and what is in fact the reality. So perception versus reality. Mm. And this really has to do with the fact that one, and I can speak as a researcher, that Barbadians typically, and Crystal hinted towards that, it would have been nice to keep it inside and deal with it inside before it goes outside. That same kind of framing is essentially what some of the same people who are participating in the poll may be thinking. So let me protect myself, protect Barbados. And therefore, that is an indication. And that's one of the reasons why a lot of Caribbean countries have said, well, we're quite clean in comparison to the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. We're above world average. Mm-hmm. You know, when the world average
score is something like 25, ranked 25.
Yeah, well, overall,
pretty good ranking.
Yeah, so Barbados is 68. The world average was actually below 50.
50, right.
So, I mean, Barbados is doing
68. Pretty good.
You know,
I think that's good when you think of Barbados at the macro level. I think that can help with things like foreign direct investment, people wanting to invest in a country that's stable and free of corruption and so on.
Yeah.
In terms of actually fixing the issues if they exist, mm-hmm. I think then that is a negative because we put our feet on the laurel and say, you know what?
We're
25th in the world. We're doing good, you know?
Excuses.
So I see the pro and I see the con.
Yeah, so there's that whole perception of what is this tool really going to address, and whether it's playing a negative role, especially in countries like the Caribbean region where you do have, they're smaller, there are a lot more cliques, there are less legislation. Because, I mean, in comparison to the others, Barbados doesn't have access to information laws. But when you look at countries like Jamaica, Trinidad, Guyana, you know, these are countries that have access to information laws, they all have integrity commissions, they all have anti-corruption laws, they've all signed on to the United Nations Convention on Corruption and the Inter-American Conventions Against Corruption. I mean, so it's a big issue in terms of polling.
Agreed. I have to agree with everything Josh has said, but I want people not to rely on the CPA as a way to say, you know, Barbados is not so bad off because you're 25th, because there are a lot of issues on how the, as Josh said, the methodology of the whole process. If you ask a question about corruption generally, what's your perception about corruption in Barbados? Many persons who are being polled may very well say, yes, there's corruption in Barbados. But when you get into the nitty-gritty questions such as the enforcement and the procedures and the mechanisms in place to deal with corruption, they may not be as familiar with the issues that are at play. So often the results may very well be slanted or skewed in that regard. So we should not see the CPA as a be-all and best-all. We really should not.
Question from the WhatsApp. Hi, Query. Are the panelists willing to lead or participate in a civil disturbance movement to peacefully bring the country into a standstill by questioning the new elected parliament to fully pass the integrity/anti-corruption legislation as it is the first order of business? In other words, peacefully shut the country down until parliament passes the legislation and fully implements it. BRIA is fully independent of government. No subvention, no money, but lots of frank discussion. And this matches one of the other messages I've seen here, which says, Query, you need to tell callers to stop saying it's a good discussion and get off their tootsies and do something. I just self-edited that. Get up and do something. Yeah. So the question is, we're here talking. What are we willing to do? You're willing to look around at each other?
The problem that I have had is that people expect there to be a Superman, a savior, a one person who is going to magically come and fix all the problems. We do not see ourselves as part of the movement. So you have a lot of persons saying, let's do this and let's do that. And then you have this thing where you do it and you come and you can't get persons to come together and only a one or two persons show up. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It is not seen as a Barbadian problem. It's seen as a one person to fix this problem. Mm-hmm. Until we recognize and stop saying that Bajans don't come out and support nothing, please, because it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. We need to start speaking into being the things that we want to see. The more we say it, the more it will become part of what we believe and what we will practice. So don't wait for a one person. Don't wait for one influencer. Persons are willing to come forward and do things, but they must see that they get the support. So if that march that we would have had last year had two persons, do you think it would have been as impactful in sending a message? What would have happened if we had 50,000 people come out? Mm-hmm. 80,000 people. If you didn't have that fear, because a lot of persons I spoke to had the fear that the standing orders for government would make them lose their job. You know how much people work in government that had that fear? So when you take them out of the equation, we had a lot of people who, in spite of the fear, still came out. And even without that, you had a lot of persons that say, man, that march ain't gonna change nothing. And a lot of persons that say, well, you do the march, but, you know, because we expect one march to change a culture that has been going on for the last 50 years. We expect to solve problems by doing one thing once, mm-hmm. without realizing that it's something that needs to be persistent. You don't erode a beach by the wave hitting the ocean, the shore once. It has to be something persistent, recurring. We have to get into the culture and mindset that is not a one-man show. It is all of us in whatever way we can. Don't sit down and think that because Crystal Howell now got this amount of following, she's the person and the only person that can do it. And because I ain't nobody, I can't do nothing, because I ain't started off as nobody. Mm-hmm. Furthermore, my Facebook was dead when I did that video. I really was about the social media. So it just goes to show, I'm saying this to show.
But how do you penetrate the mind of those who are thinking, I here trying to make a living and you know, break a bread, as I say, and you want me to go and do this fight at the
trying to make a living too?
But no, I've spoken to teachers and so on, and they say, Corey, you know, union calling, but you know they're taking out your day's pay and so on. So people are not willing to make our sacrifice, basically, and for the longer. So, how do you speak to those persons? What do you tell those persons? They don't want to get involved because they just want to make a little living here. They want us to go and be the martyrs, you know, go and kill ourselves for my good cause.
But people have to start seeing their life.
Yes, we know that, but how do you convince them?
You have to motivate. You're not going to get persons to do things. Look at the leaders who have been able to get persons.
I want some specifics, man. You need to hit someone two by four around the head. I just want something that you can go and do for 2 o'clock this afternoon.
Right. Oh boy. So the first thing is that I will say, in issues like anti-corruption or even human rights issues, you're going to find a very small number of persons being the catalyst for change. And that's okay. So we have to admit that, yes, we're not going to have a million people behind you when you're going to fight. The other thing is we need to ask people what they can do in their own spaces. Not how do they step out of their comfort zone and enter a new space to then feel uncomfortable. What can you do as a reverend in a church? What can you do as a teacher in your classroom to talk to your students about issues of corruption and integrity? What can you do as a fisherman in fair pricing? What can you do as a person who works on a construction site and recognizes that material is being stolen? Mm-hmm. What can you do? And this is really what it comes down to. It's this message has to resonate with each citizen, public and private, to say, what can I do in a very small way? When I taught a course that I designed in anti-corruption strategies, I asked my students to determine what they're going to do. One of my students worked in the public sector. And the only thing that she did every day was to put up a stop corruption sign on the notice board. That's it. What if we had a stop corruption sign or no bribe zone by the licensing office? What if we just had that? What if we just spelt out specifically that bribing a public official is an offense and put it big and bold by the cash register as you enter? What happens then? What happens then when you do the same thing at a hospital? What happens when you go to clock in and you see that sign? Those are simple things that we can do. What happens if there are 10,000 Barbadians that decide to change their Facebook profile picture to stop corruption? Isn't that a message?
I think it starts small. So every, because the things that you mentioned are things that are inexpensive and that anybody can get out there and do. 7 minutes before one, Brass Tack Sunday, you are on the air.
Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Corey.
Hi, good afternoon, Miss Desaide.
On Desaide.
We don't are off here. You go ahead.
To your guest, I want any of your guests in the studio to give me 5 ways to know when a politician is corrupt. Hello?
We here. You know you're good for that, stamping people too. You go ahead, you guys.
I want to give me 5 ways. Politician is corrupt.
I think I will twist the question a little bit so as to make sure that I don't, you know, create any issues. I will say that 5 signs that will show me that I have a politician of integrity is a willingness to be transparent with what is going on with government funds. And if there are any questions of authority, of indiscretion, they are willing to come forward and bring the evidence to show that there was no wrongdoing. The more willing some person is to come forward and show, yes, I follow the process, the more I am able to see, okay, yes, this politician is trying to make sure that I can see what is going on with public funds. Another way is to make sure that when issues are identified, there is some urgency in resolving them, because we're not expecting people to come out here perfect. Mm-hmm. I go and they audit businesses all the time. They find issues. But the ones that stand the test of time are the ones that I come back the next year and see they worked on making sure those issues were resolved. They have that urgency and built in that they want to make sure that something that was identified is fixed. So I shouldn't be coming 10 years later and seeing the same issues that were raised eons ago. I shouldn't be coming 10 years later and seeing legislation not passed. I shouldn't be coming 10 years later and seeing all of these things keep repeating themselves. These are the things that will make me feel, yes, this is a politician of integrity. This is some person I could vote for. Another thing that I think would be important is to make sure that they educate themselves on how they can adequately handle these particular areas that are so key for us to move forward as a country, because we sometimes don't have the adequate tools or knowledge to be able to move forward. We don't want to just say Barbados is a great country and we just rest on our laurels. How are other countries moving forward? Are we taking these examples and trying to see how we can tailor them for ourselves and move forward? So innovative thinking, creative thinking, you don't have to recreate the wheel. There are other countries who are doing these things that we can see, okay, this part might work for us and this part may not work. So those are 3 examples for myself that would show me that this is a politician that not only has integrity, but has the country's best interests at heart.
And I would add to that by saying that, you know, we're a small society and often we interact with politicians. It's an election time right now. And, you know, their accusations or their claims about things such as vote buying. And if it's a situation where one of your politicians approaches you or someone from their party approaches you for you to sell your vote, then quite frankly, that politician's integrity is under question as well. Mm-hmm. And if a politician is willing to break the law to try to buy your vote, then why would you put that person into power again or for the first time to continue in their poor decision making?
Right. See, I like to keep it real. You mm-hmm. see, we going back to these people thinking about a little something for themselves, a little bread buying. Mm-hmm. They may be interested in the part of the integrity. They want to eat the food. They want, you understand what I mean? So I agree with you saying, but I think we got to start to try to get those people to understand. Josh, and then we go to the lines.
Yeah, so Crystal pointed out a number of things in terms of a politician who has integrity. But if you think that you are around a politician who is using his position or her position of power or authority in an abusive way, an abusive way can mean to get any specific kind of advantage, to be crooked, to not just receive a bribe from you or accept a bribe, but to do anything underhanded, then that politician is corrupt. And I think you would know that once you recognize that that person is doing something that you know legitimately is not right. So I think whether we list 5 factors or 10 factors is not necessarily an issue. The issue is, are we going to continue to prop up leaders who do the wrong thing? Are we going to continue to expect those leaders who do the wrong thing that magically when they get into power, they do the right thing? That's farcical.
You scared me the entire discussion, you know, because I know the answer to that question.
I have a question for the panel, if I may.
Go ahead, sir.
The question I want to ask is, I know we've talked a lot about freedom of information, we've talked a lot about integrity legislation. Is it just the passing of the legislation, is it just having it in place that's going to make this fundamental change to our trust in our political directorate? Because I know there are places where you have declaration of assets, where politicians come into office and say, I have $5 million in assets. After a year, they declare their assets and it's $20 million, and they continue in politics. But there is declaration of assets legislation. I can quote the Bahamas as an example. So is it the legislation passing and the freedom of information that makes it legitimate? If you have a press, for example, that is, their license depend on the government minister saying, yes, you can continue, and there is no, is it just that? I know you originally talked about having a network, a framework.
Ecosystem, yeah.
An ecosystem, yeah.
So I think that legislation, and quite often that's what we ask for, laws. Yeah. Laws are insufficient. In my more recent work that I'm wrapping up now is that I'm looking at anti-corruption strategies comprising 4 components. International laws, so conventions, laws themselves, anti-corruption laws, the institution or the quality of the institution, which is the ability to prosecute, etc., like what exists in is recently being passed in Jamaica. And finally, civil society. You see, the people component is important in all of this. There must be that kind of synergy between international conventions, laws, institutions, and civil society. And that's how I see all of this working. It's to create a facilitative environment at the end of the day for persons, because you mentioned public trust. For public trust to exist, you must have a facilitative environment. Mm-hmm. Law or having a specific piece of legislation is just one component. Mm-hmm. There are others.
Correct. I agree, because when if you have these things and you don't have that implementation, you don't have something as simple as making an example of someone, mm-hmm. I think these things are transparent. You don't see them. Let's go back to the lines. 1 minute after one. Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Hi. Good afternoon, Corey. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thanks. And you?
Yeah, I'm terrific. Mm-hmm. Just want to make one small point about the legislation and the ministers, politicians, really, in getting involved in stuff that brings them personal aggrandizement. You know, I really don't have a difficulty with a human being having access to a circle of influence while he or she is in power that gives them an opportunity to make money for themselves. Everybody knows how networking works, right? We do it as business people. You go and you join a club or you join a group or a fraternity, and you hope that by rubbing shoulders with the right people, it will come back to benefit you at some point in time. Okay, that's what networking is about. So ministers and high-level politicians have an opportunity to do this as well. The challenge I have is that while you are doing that, you are already pulling a $100,000 plus salary out of my pocket. So it can't work both ways. You can't get a big salary too and claim it is yours, right? And then go and make extra money on the side. So make up your mind which one you want. You are a public servant. You are here to serve. And if you're here to do that, then serve me well. And if you have an opportunity to make a buck on the side after you leave office, fine with me. I don't have a problem with that. But don't take it both ways. And that's my contribution, sir.
Anybody?
Yeah. So that's a very interesting comment. But I think that the caller had a real and genuine and authentic position, which is to say that networking exists. And it's okay, and it's acceptable. But the abuse of public office for personal gain is unacceptable. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the caller's position. Mm-hmm. You know, he went around a number of things, but his position came back down to the fact that it's okay to be in public office and to get access. Access will come with office. Mm-hmm. But the abuse or the misuse of that access mm-hmm. is where we have a problem. For private gain is a problem.
Sir, to you and your guests, until political figures in Barbados are called to account and can be taken before the law courts and senators face the ballots, I will never, ever vote for no politician in Barbados ever again. Never. Our political servants have all the laws for themselves, pension after 8 or 10 years, and their masters struggle to get a pension or not. Is Barbados well protected by our permanent secretaries in the outflow of taxpayers' funds? Brass Stats, good afternoon. You're on the air.
Mr. Corey?
Yes, please.
Yes. Now, Barbados is rated 25 out of 138, it is?
Is 138 or 185?
76, I believe.
185. That makes it.
Enough countries. That's what one thing I know for sure.
But that even makes the statistics even better.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
I know this caller here. There's a guy, he actually willing to bet me money that you are the voice of a well-known person, and I keep telling them is you're not that person. So I don't know.
Well, I don't know. I'm no well-known person. Mm-hmm. I'm very much a grassroots person who lives on the ground and understands everything that is going on in Barbados.
I just needed you to say that because I'm going to collect my winnings after this show. They swear to me that you're the voice of Christopher Sinclair. I tell them no. Can't disguise the voice that good. Go ahead, caller.
I hope Christopher Sinclair gets his lawyers to send you all a letter. Anyway, let me make my point.
Go ahead.
Can anybody there around that table, can y'all point to any, I'm not asking you the name because your name can get yourself in trouble, but I want y'all to, in your minds, you can think of any politician, because if it comes down to politician, it means members of the cabinet. You can think in your mind, I don't want to reveal it. If you reveal it, the cabinet will come after you. But you can say to me that you can think of any one member of the cabinet who is corrupt in Barbados?
That's a very good question, caller. I think I would flip that in a different way. Why is it that cabinet doesn't want to create a very facilitating environment for integrity to exist by ensuring the proclamation of the Prevention of Corruption Act of 2012. My thing is, whether there are allegations or not, caller, that's fine. But why wouldn't a government want to do what's best for a country by ensuring that a piece of legislation that is in line with international best practice is not proclaimed? I would like to know why. So I would say that while we may or may not have allegations, because I am not aware personally, what I would like to say is that we have to do what is right, whether in cabinet or otherwise. Members of cabinet are politicians, and they're paid by taxpayers to do a job. Do that job and do it well.
But that question, I can ask another question. Why does Jesus Christ of Nazareth make his appearance tomorrow? You see, this is out of foolishness. You see, the whole thing about this whole situation is you just say you can't point to any one member of the present cabinet because this is not about the Barbados Labour Party's members and all.
You're listening to the right station, but we didn't talk about any cabinet members today or anything in our discussion. I'm a bit lost. The question I would want to ask the caller really is, do you see any corruption in Barbados, or is Barbados corruption free in your opinion?
No, that a minister can't approve a single saint. I mean, the PS is the chief accounting officer, man.
That is not so. I'll tell you why. If you read the new procurement bill, you will see that that bill is seeking to actually take all the ministers and cabinet out of the decision. In order to take them out with this bill, they will have to be in presently. So my question to you, do you see any corruption in Barbados, or is Barbados corruption free?
I don't see any corruption. A minister cannot spend a cent.
But it's not only about spending, it is about
then proclaim the law.
I would like to ask the caller what his definition of corruption is, so that we can make sure that we're on the same page. Because I may be here sitting down having my own definition, and you have something different. So according to your definition, you may be correct. There is no corruption.
I am not proffering any new definition. I am going by the definition that you all around the table there, and other people in Barbados are always pointing fingers at politicians. And listen to me, politicians are normal, are even far.
You know, but who does point put fingers at politicians the most? Other politicians.
No.
Other politicians.
The private sector and people like you all.
But no. Let me ask you this question, though. Do other politicians point fingers at other politicians?
Yes. The Barbados Labour Party always point the fingers at the Democratic Labour Party, yes.
And vice versa?
No.
I said, have a good day, sir. Have a good day. No. Listen.
Are you serious?
I thank you, Carla, for a beautiful laugh this Sunday afternoon. Corey, we need to face the fact that a large portion of Barbadians facilitate and profit from corruption, from stealing toilet paper and sanitation to using materials intended for public works. It is so pervasive in our society. A lot of people want something for nothing, and that is part of the reason why we are not paying the price. The Auditor General attempts to shine a light on these and other deficiencies, but absolutely nothing has been done by successive governments. This is why persons have become so disengaged with the political process. Nothing changes, so why bother? Nobody wants to plant the corn, but everybody wants to raid the barn. Let's get some closing comments as we are now on the home stretch of this edition of Brass Stack Sunday. Oh, over to you guys.
Well, I would say that in closing, we have to start seeing corruption as a national issue, not an issue that concerns any particular party, DLP or BLP. It has been an issue that has been going on for generations, really. And until we start talking in it seriously and taking it seriously as a national concern, as opposed to a political football, then the situation would not improve. And we really need to make the connection between how corruption affects our lives, everyday Barbadians. It's a discussion that's difficult to be had, but it's certainly one that must be had.
I think of preventing corruption the same way you would think of simple processes like even having your teeth cleaned. You want to prevent a cavity, and you can't quantify how many cavities you would have prevented by making sure you do these processes, but you don't want to wait until you have to detect it and have to go through the painful process of extracting a tooth that has decayed. In the same vein, we may not always be able to see how these measures may capture millions of dollars saved in terms of preventing corruption from happening. But we are seeing right now, through all of these reports, the cost to Barbadians and the slack that we have to pick up by allowing these practices to occur. So you may not see it as corruption per se, but mismanagement, wrongdoing, all of these things come at a cost to Barbadians. And if you have not, in the last 10 years, felt as though you've been living harder, kudos to you, but I know the majority of Bajans have been feeling that pinch, and it's now for us to link that pinch. Regardless of whatever you may feel as though you might get on the side, it cannot make up for the years that you would have been feeling the pressure of having to make up for all of this mismanagement, corruption, whatever you may want to call it. that has been happening that can be prevented if these things are put in place. When the seatbelt law was put in place, it didn't just happen that the law came in place and people magically started wearing seatbelts. There was a great deal of enforcement. So we need all persons to play a part. We need citizens to play a part. We need enforcement to play a part, legislators and politicians. This is not a pointing fingers at a one person thing. I'm pointing the fingers at myself as well. Where we see that we can play a role, no matter how small, in contributing to a better society, let us do that.
Definitely.
Yeah, I agree 100% with Crystal. At the end of the day, corruption is not about politicians. It's about us. It's about our quality of life. And we have to reflect on what kind of society we want to have and to live in and to have future generations live in. And if this existing society is something that you want with all its flaws and you want to continue, then fine. I accept that. If you don't want it, ask yourself, how can you be a change agent in a very small way? And if you can, start daily. That's the best way that you can get it done. I would say that there is a gap between people who lead us and citizens. We need to figure out an appropriate measure or mechanism to engage people sufficiently. Thank you.
Okay, I think we've covered the aim today, which is really to deal with what is corruption, the corruption index, and the cost of corruption to Barbados and improving integrity. I want to thank Josh Drayden, Crystal Howell, and Devon Bruce, and of course, my producer and technical operator, Mr. Dennis Johnson. I've been your host and moderator, Corey Lane, and giving final thanks to Williams Industries Incorporated for making today possible. Do enjoy the rest of your day.